this is an oral history interview with Chief Officer Jonathan Samuel. And we're on the Agalas, somewhere 49, I think.
49, yeah.
Okay. And it is today the 11th of February 2011. First of all, your own career. How did you take me through your journey, I can want to say, until becoming Chief Officer on the Agalas?
All right. My sea career actually started in 97, basically. After I left school, I was actually doing oceanography for about a year. And then I decided it wasn't for me, so I left that. And then instead of working under the water, I decided to work on top of the water. In 96, I decided to go and do my T1 and T2 at Tech, and completed that. And then I got a cadetship with my present company, Smith, in 97, and then that's when I started.
When was your first trip on the Agalas?
My first trip on the Agalas only came about
2002. 2002.
Yeah.
And was that as...
That was a second officer.
A second officer. And when you started going to sea, was it always something you wanted to do, coming on the Agalas?
I never even, was interested in going to sea. It was only when I got to Tech and I realized, okay, I'm not really interested in what I decided on, and changed my mind and then went into it and approached my father, because my father was working in the harbor services, and spoke to him about ships, because he's pretty much involved with that. Started to get some information and I went for it. It was totally something that I didn't even think about when I was at school. I was always other stuff.
And when you started with your cadetship and you started going to sea with Smith, was there always something that you talk about yourself, that sometime in the future you would like to go on the Agalas? Or was it...
Although it was a DEA vessel, it was sort of a ship that everybody, aspired to, mm-hmm. If they get the opportunity, they would take it with open hands, because of the unique trips that she does. And it was always at the back of my mind, if I get the opportunity, I'd really like to go, especially this voyage going down to Antarctica, the other two also. Because it's also very unique. Now the ships go to like Marianne and Gulf in our industry in South Africa at least. But it was definitely something that I've always thought about. If the opportunity would come, I would be glad to take it.
Okay, that first trip, second officer in 2002, was this to Antarctica?
No, that was actually my first trip was down to Marianne Island.
What do you remember about that trip?
Lots of science work. it was my first trip, and
who was the master?
The captain at that time was Kevin Tate. And it was very nice. It was a new experience for me. It was actually my first trip also as second officer. On the other vessels, I've only been as third mate, and that was my first trip as second. So it was also a work challenge and also a new environment, a new ship. That voyage, it was fairly okay. It wasn't too bad, but the one after that was hectic.
What was that?
It was sort of a charter. It was a bird trip. We went down to Marion Island. We had all these old, elderly people that went on this charter. And there was very much a concern about the safety of these people having to going up and down the stairs and outside ladders. So, but that trip we had some hectic weather. It was also a special trip because we went to the ice age. From Marion Island, we went right south and went to the ice edge and steamed past a couple of birds. It was my very first time with sea ice experience. I've been around birds in the northern, in the Arctic, but this was my first sea ice experience, and it was also a new.
During that journey, did you pass the polar circle?
No. It was fairly early winter, so the ice was already forming and was far from the Arctic Circle.
So you had Arctic experience before that?
Yes.
What vessel
it was the Vora at Voltermaler, which is now no longer with us. She's been scrapped, unfortunately.
So the Vora at Voltermaler, was she a salvage vessel?
She's a salvage tug, or was a salvage tug, and ocean going and ocean towing. And we had a contract to go and pick up an ice rig that was up in Wainwright, north of Alaska, right in the Arctic Circle. And luckily for us, it was summer. There was not a lot of sea ice, but lots of bergs. And that's where my first encounters with bergs came, cold weather. And
do you have to do something differently when there's lots of birds around?
The danger of growlers and small bergy bits, it's difficult to see them in the rough weather. The Vorrod wasn't an ice class vessel. She was, although she was ice class 1, same as this one, she wasn't strengthened the way this ship was. She wasn't built for breaking or going through ice, you know. But we went up there and picked up the rig, and it took us 30 days to tow her back down to Korea.
We dropped. Trying to figure out how you went.
We went. We got the call in. We were in Singapore, and we had to go from Singapore up east past China, and then north of between Japan and Russia, the Kamchatka Peninsula there, and went up to the Aleutian String Islands where Dutch Harbor is, Dutch Harbor in Alaska, and then went past the Bering Straits right up north, and then picked up and came with the same route.
Wow.
That was quite a long voyage.
Yeah, it sounds like. Okay, and your first trip to Antarctica proper, when was this?
That was 2002-2003, that summer.
Yeah. And that was also with Captain Tate?
That was actually a special voyage. It was the last voyage Captain Tate did, and Captain Hall, the ice pilot, he took over from him in that same year.
And you were second officer?
I was second officer also.
What are the duties of the second officer?
Second officer is in charge of mainly navigation, so you are the guy that does all the plotting, laying off courses from Cape Town to Antarctica and back, and wherever she's got to go. And then also in charge of medical if the doctor's not here. So you look after the hospital, and then assist the doctor when the doctor's here. The doctor's not here, you're the doctor.
So you need an extra kind of knowledge about first aid or something?
Yeah. Got to get yourself heavily involved in the first aid and also the drug administration. So.
And your first trip as chief officer, when was that?
My first trip as chief officer was actually on the research of Africana, but my first trip as chief mate here was 2009
as chief mate. And then how do your duties change? The chief mate probably has a lot more responsibility.
That's a vast difference. There's a big difference. In, although you're still involved with the navigation on the bridge in your watch, your 4-8 watch, you're not so involved in the navigational duties of getting the ship to A to B like a second officer. The chief mate has got lots of responsibilities. First of all, it's navigation and then the cargo work. A big part of it, then the stability of the ship. Then also the safety is also the safety officer of the vessel, and then also the security officer of the vessel. So it's
so
a big.
Somebody security? You mean if somebody breaks the law on the ship, you're in charge?
Not necessarily. It's interaction between facilities and the ship, between, I think, interaction between the ship and other vessels, and then also yeah, basically the security of the vessel itself, making sure that everything is safe when you go to a new port or even back in Cape Town. Yeah.
So you are extra involved with cargo work,
yes,
and the safety.
Cargo safety, security, stability, very important for the vessel.
So preparations for a journey like this one, what does that involve before you even get on the ship, or is it mostly shipbound?
Preparation for this voyage, this type of voyage.
Yeah, for this type of voyage, to Antarctica or the islands.
It starts long before December. It starts in mid-winter already, or even when this one are finished, you're already planning for the next one, what can be done differently and what you should get for the next voyage. And then the planning is mainly from here, but after the August, September, then you start planning, you know, getting, you know, finding out what sort of weird cargo you're going to get, because there's always weird cargo.
Like the garage.
So you need to prep yourself for that, because you more or less know what you take down every year.
Yeah.
And you know those things have got special spots on the ship to put them in, but then you need to plan ahead for unknowns. Find out what are they planning this year, like the Bucky, for instance. This year, we had to make special arrangements for that, for picking it up, first of all, getting it onto the ship, and then how to get it off on the other side. So we were heavily involved in getting information about the vehicle, first of all, and then planning how to get it on the vessel safely without damaging it, and how to get it back on that side. Right? So
and how to pack, I suppose, because to me it seemed a lot of it is playing Tetris.
That's right, yes. You've got to be very good at puzzles. Because you shift around stuff, and then you initially start, okay, we're going to put this there, get the list from the DCO, and this is coming to the ship, and then you get dimensions and weights and that. When the stuff arrives on the shelf, it's a little bit different. Then you gotta quickly think, okay, put it that side first, and we get the other stuff on, and then we'll make a plan later.
And that is it mostly the chief officer who operates the crane, or is that just something that you do that?
It's an unfortunate case now for the last 2 years that the chief mate has been seconded that duty. Unfortunately, it normally is the practice that the second mate and third mate is the drivers for the crane, and then only the heavy lifts the chief mate will do. And the training for the junior officers has, I won't say it's fallen away a little bit, but it's with a big turnaround of staff, there hasn't been really time to get them up to scratch as to operate the crane proficiently. And for the last 2 years, the chief mate has been, you know, sitting in that crane all day long. And it takes you a bit out of the picture on the deck, because you sit up there and you're controlling weights, and while you're swinging a load back onto the ship, there's new cargo arriving, and it's a little bit different to the list now. It needs to be planned. And sometimes the master or the captain has to take over on the ship as to what we're going to do with it, because now I'm involved with the crane. So I'm a little bit, it takes you out of the picture a little bit, as to they call you up and listen, what do you want to do? And then you're still driving, concentrating, and then you got to think about the next one. And it's been a little help, especially with Captain Hall, yeah, because now he's sort of overseeing, and the captain is maneuvering the ship, and I'm in the crane, so he can assist the DCO as to tell him, okay, leave that one for now, bring the next one, and we'll take that one, and while I'm getting my ducks in a row there.
Okay. It seems like a very warm place to be, that crane. I mean, it's kind of small and stuffy.
It's small, it's cramped. There is a nice heater inside there, but only your body heat is enough in that. So most of the time I sit there with the window open anyway.
Just coming back to your first trip, what were your first impressions like of Antarctica?
What the hell am I doing No. Antarctica has always been a special place for me. Always wanted to come here. The first time I got there, I was just gobsmacked by the ocean side of it. That's probably very intriguing. The formation of ice, how it depletes, how it changes every year. You know, the amount of ice around. This year has been very unique.
I mean,
there was one season we were down here, summer season, where we were stuck for 8 days straight in the ice. I mean, that was hectic.
And now we had this hectic swell and the ice show.
So yeah, for me Antarctica has always been impressive. I've never really... some guys, they come down here year after year, and for them it's just another trip by now, you know, but the amount of times I've been down here is... it's still amazing. Every time I don't underestimate this place, because anything can happen at any time. Fog comes in, the snow comes in, you can't see nothing, and then there's growlers and bogey bits all over, and it's scary.
Okay. And have you ever had the chance of going to the base itself?
No, I have not had the opportunity to go there. It was planned for this year if there was opportunity, but it never came about. Always been busy when the flights are in operation, because when the weather's good, we have to work. And I had the fortunate chance to go to the summer station, purely because I had to go and look at cargo. But I took advantage of that, and we actually went into the old New Maya 2 base, which is under the ice. That was amazing.
All the crystals, the ice
Yes,
crystals.
Yeah.
I also had a chance to go.
Ah, that's stunning down there with those crystals. And then also the one Sunday, I was busy with catching up on paperwork, and the captain called me up and said, would you like to go to the New Maya base? So yeah, got the opportunity to go to the New Maya station at least.
The new one.
Yeah,
the fancy hotel.
The New Maya 3, yeah.
Spaceship on ice. And did you get a chance to go on shore at South Georgia?
South Georgia, yes. I managed to get about half an hour there to go walk about. So yeah, it was also a new one for me. I haven't been to South Georgia.
And Marion? What did you remember about Marion?
Marion, for me, it's... a lot of guys like Marion Island. I'm not so fond of Marion Island.
The weather.
The weather. The weather changes. You can have four seasons in one day. It's a very popular saying on the ship for that place.
Yes, no, that's true. People think weather change quickly in Antarctica.
It
goes back.
Jeez. Marion Island is... got its own challenges. It's for us having to hide away from the weather there it's very difficult, because there's not a lot of shelter there, and you've also always got to think about the safety of the ship in terms of the weather as well. But it's interesting work, it's nice work. The trip down there is not so long, it's usually about 5, depending on the weather, 6 days. But to get there is difficult sometimes. They plan the Marion trip. And it's very close to winter, and for the past years with the construction of the new base, the ship was forced to go down there in winter. And we've had two very bad trips last year.
Was that were you on the vessel when the engine broke?
I was on that trip when we lost the one main engine, and we were...
What was that like? Hearing that...
I was actually on watch when it happened.
The
bridge. And I was actually on the bridge when it happened. And
who phoned you?
No, I actually heard the flipping big bang up there, and we felt the massive vibration. And I was with my one hand on the stick, just about to pull back when the phone rang, which was going to be my next thing to phone down to the engine room. And that's when the second told me there's some big trouble, pull back, and I was already busy.
Was that the second engineer?
Second engineer, yeah. He was on watch. So
what time was that?
That was just about between 4:30 and 5:00. And that incident woke up the whole ship. I mean, people were standing outside their cabins in their life jackets.
Well, I probably would have been one of them.
But the situation was manageable because we still had one main engine. It was a big concern that we won't be able to complete the trip with a one main engine. But we planned all sorts of contingencies for that, so we continue. But that experience was hectic. It was very challenging to get through. What was it, 36 days on one main engine?
Who was the captain?
Freddie.
So did you have to wake the captain then as well?
Yes,
well, everybody probably woke up.
Well, that was my second call down to him. Well, when I got the phone call from the second, we stopped the ship, and then my next call was to him. And then I just turned the vessel into the weather, and she sat nicely in the weather, and we sorted things out, first of all, downstairs, got the bow thruster going, in case we needed it, and maneuvered into the weather. The weather wasn't that bad at that stage, but it was building, and it was about 4 or 5 meters off. The wind was with us, so we were lucky that day.
The passengers, how did you manage them? Or did you just make an announcement like, okay, it's all under control?
No, we sort of got the message down to Bernie, and Bernie took care of it. He was the guy that looked after the passengers. But at that time, nobody knew what was going on. They were just, wondering, so the message quickly spread around the ship. Mm. That's very easy.
That's very easy to spread anything on the ship.
Yeah, so the word got around very quickly that there was some sort of trouble. And Bernie just put them at ease, I suppose.
Was he a good person for that job?
Yeah, no, Bernie's very good at that, looking after the packs. He's very experienced and very good at that.
Yeah, he's very experienced. In terms of incidents at sea like that, were you involved in any others, like rescue missions, or were you in the vessel when the guy got killed?
No, I was on other ships in the fleet when the major incidents happened. The only big thing that I was involved in on this vessel was in the Cape Africa salvage. We were just completing our Marion takeover trip. We were on our way back to Cape Town when we heard about the casualty where a bulk carrier got into trouble with a big crack on the port side. She was taking on water and was sinking. And the John Ross at that time, which is now the Smith & Mandla, the sister ship to the Holleran. She was commissioned to tow her into Paul's Bay, and we were commissioned to assist, because we were a helicopter platform, and also all the accommodation we had for all the salvage masters and salvage crew that was working on that project stayed on the ship, and we were logistic support. And
but did you first complete the journey, drop your own packs, or?
We were on our way back to Cape Town, so We went back to Cape Town and dropped off the packs immediately, sailed back out and got them on the way. So the helicopter crew, which was CHC at that time, before Titan, they also were involved. They got the contract to be the helicopter support, and so they didn't sign off, they stayed on the ship. So.
What are the challenges in terms of working on the Agalas specifically?
In my job, you get used to working with the cargo and the stability and the safety aspects and security and navigation of that. My biggest challenge for me personally is managing people. I've got a squad of 10 deck personnel and then 2 officers below me. And then sometimes up to 4 cadets like we have at the moment that I've got to look
after. The cadets all resort under you?
Yes. So they fall on line to me, so first of all I've got to keep them busy, which is easy on this ship. But managing their interaction is difficult. People problems and personality conflicts and that type of thing. I've always tended to shy away from that when I was in second mate and third mate position, as it was something that I really didn't like to do. But in chief mate position, you are forced to the point because you're in charge of the deck department. And so a whole squad of 14, 15 people on the ship. So it's very, that's very difficult to manage. And on this trip, it's been very easy. A couple of days. So yeah, it's, we've got a jolly good squad at the moment. No real big problems with interactions and personality clashes and that type of thing.
And the weather has been good as well.
No, we've been blessed with very good weather.
South Africa doesn't really strike one as a seagoing nation. Why would you say that is, even though we have such a big coastline?
Yeah, I think in the past it used to be. With the absorbment of Safmarine, that sort of fell away. In the past, when Safmarine operated, all the cargo ships and container ships around the coast, I mean, everybody knew about our seafarers, and that was a very popular choice for young people to go into, to go to sea. But I think after that, it sort of fell away. We didn't have a national carrier anymore, and the other companies that operated still tended to go for foreign employment.
When they tend to go for foreign employment, what nationalities are
they
mostly?
In
South African
ports. In the South African industry, worldwide, they tend to go for Filipinos in the Indian market. Relatively cheaper, you know, salaries and that wise. But in our company, they tend to go for Russian, Eastern Bloc people. And that's sort of been stopped. We've come back to employing mostly South Africans.
Yeah, because I've noticed
that
is at least
the
only South
Africans. Only South Africans, yeah.
And
if
not South Africans,
English.
So would you like to become the master of this
Well,
do you like that kind of job?
Yes, no, definitely. That's the ultimate goal as a deck officer. I've got two more trips to complete, then my seat time will be full. And hopefully by the end of the year, I'll have my master's ticket, my first trip. So yeah, looking forward to that.
Okay, so how many, does it go on hours or days that you have to complete?
It's the sea time is counted in months. From your chief mate, once you've got your chief mate and you're sailing as chief mates, you need 12 months sea time.
12 months sea time. Well, doing Antarctic trips probably helps because that's like 3 months
at a
time.
3 months, yeah. It takes that out of
it. Like 4 Antarctica trips.
Yeah.
Are you going to marry now?
Going to do the inauguration trip, and I'm also doing a takeover trip.
In terms of VIP voyages like the inauguration trip, are they different?
Yes, no, definitely. The ship is prepared in a different manner, you know. It's everything is spotless. there's also other contingencies that you got to look out for, you know, keeping them busy for those 4 days. You know, 5 or 6 days down to Marion. Because normally with the takeover crew and that, you know, they keep themselves busy with getting ready for their projects, you know, making sure that they've got their gear sorted, preparing their stuff, you know. With the VIPs, I mean, 6 days on the ship. So, so you got to plan that, you know, keep them busy, you know. So there's lots of talks and there's tours and little events.
And that's supposed to be planned. Not all of them are necessarily sea fit.
That's the other thing. Yeah. Most of them will be landlubbers, so won't have sea legs, so I gotta prepare for that.
Extra medical officer, extra. what do you enjoy about working on Logalis? That's like a list specific.
In our fleet, this is the only real cargo ship that we've got, and that's one of the challenges of my job especially, and that's nice. But yeah, Golas has got that aura, you know, everybody wants to be here, and that makes us sort of special.
Do you think the new ship will be as special?
The new ship will definitely, I mean, she will continue where the Golas will. I'm not sure yet what's going to happen with her. But when she goes out of the equation and the new one takes over, I'm sure she will just carry on where this one leaves, you know. And everybody's looking forward to the new Golas, and that's, you know, everybody's sad about this one, especially now that we still aren't sure as to what's going to happen to her. But the new one, everybody's looking forward to it. Everybody's always, you know, new build is, it's a lot of hard work, first of all, to get the initial systems up and running and get procedures and that type of thing going, and getting used to the new ship. Everybody's looking forward to that, but it's going to be sad when this one has to go.
Okay.
When,
if you could choose a name for the new ship, what would it be?
Next year, I got us two.
Okay. That's a good answer. It's probably the most commonsensical one.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the tendency in the fleet has been to go for female names, and that's been females involved in the struggle in the past years, you know. That's been, and I'm sure it will be something like that. But, I mean, the predecessor. To this one was the RSA, and then from that they say Golas, maybe just the Golas, I don't know.
There's not that many females left to name ships after. Speaking about females, what do you think about women at sea?
That's a bit of a. It's nice to have the female aspect on the vessel, because they sometimes put different thinking behind certain challenges, you know. I've always been comfortable working with females on the ship. I've never really had a problem with it. But sometimes the difficult part of it is that you can see sometimes where a person, even with a male crew member, where the person is not really suitable for it. It's easier, I suppose, for a man to just fall into this man type of work. But you get sometimes females on board that you can see really, you know, this is not something that will suit them. And the difficult part is to then tell them where they have put such a lot of effort into becoming, first of all, into the system, and then having to carry on with it, and difficult to tell them, listen, maybe you should, you know, think about something else in the same industry, you know. But unfortunately, I've never been really in that position to do that. And I suppose it will be difficult. But as I said, you know, I don't have a problem. We've had some lovely ladies in our fleet, which unfortunately have got to get a company. So the greener pastures, into foreign companies. But yeah, there's still a couple in our company that's with us, and I'm sure they will stick it out for the long run. But yeah. I must say, I've had some wonderful, especially I can remember one chief officer that was pretty good, and I always looked up to her and well respected.
Would you like to take your family along to Antarctica or show some of your family members?
It's always been something that I wanted to do, especially the wife and now my daughter. I would really like to take them, but it's never been practical, especially with the work situation and how she's studying. So it's never been just to start, take a couple of months off from work. It wasn't practical. But yeah, when the opportunity comes, yes, certainly.
Does your wife have sea legs?
She's been on a couple of harbour trips and around Robben Island, short day trips with us. She tells me, yes, no, she's a strong seafarer because her father was in the Navy and she used to go out to sea with him when she was young. And on those day trips, yeah, she was strong.
Maybe you can take them on a Marion voyage sometime.
We'll see. We'll see if the opportunity comes in, definitely.
Is there anything you would like to add? Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah. Thank you.